Welcome to Vaginas, Vulvas, and Vibrators with Jordan Donnell. This is a safe place to learn about women's health and sexual wellness. I'm your host, Jordan Donnell, physician assistant, women's sexual health educator, and intimacy coach.
On today's podcast, we are talking about pleasure, owning your pleasure practice, what is good sex, and how to receive more pleasure in our lives. We even go through a body scan and talk about your pleasure profile in today's episode. Are you craving more in the bedroom? Are you desiring deep connection to yourself and your partner? Are you wanting something just a little bit more fun? If so, the ultimate guide for foreplay is for you. This is an absolutely free guide with 10 of my favorite tips and tricks to spice it up in the bedroom to help just try something new, try something different, try something fun, try something playful, and bring more spice and sexiness into the bedroom. Go to foreplay.jordandonnell.com to get your ultimate guide to foreplay. Joining me today is Jamila M. Dawson. She's a licensed marriage and family therapist, and she is also the co-author of the book, With Pleasure, Managing Trauma Triggers for More Vibrant Sex and Relationships. She's a licensed therapist with an expertise in sexuality, trauma, and relationships. She is also a sex educator since 2005 and is practicing psychotherapy since 2015. She is the founder and owner of the psychotherapy practice, Fire and Flow Therapy, and her work is grounded in interpersonal neurobiology, sex positivity, liberation psychology, and the politics of pleasure. I'm so excited to chat with you today, Jamila. Let's start with, what does pleasure mean to you?
So in some ways, it can mean so many things, which is why I think I've kind of fallen in love with the term. But if I really had to kind of break it down, I'd say that pleasure is the practice of being aware of our senses, of what feels interesting or good to us, what feels nourishing and sustainable, not just physically and not just sexually, but what are things that are pleasurable spiritually, intellectually. And so I really strongly feel that when we follow our curiosity and our senses, that will lead to pleasure, and that is pleasure.
I love that. How does one find pleasure?
I think when I talk with my clients and I kind of suggest, oh, let's build out what I call a pleasure profile for you, a lot of times they're like, I don't know what you mean. And so I'll ask them, well, let's start with your six senses, not just the five, but also including temperature. All of us have temperatures we like, temperatures we don't like, scents that we like, sensations, colors. So I'll ask people to start there. How about for a week or two, what are the scents that feel and smell right for you? What are the colors? You might notice that I've got fuchsia, my hair is fuchsia, my lipstick's fuchsia. I love fuchsia. I always have it somewhere around me. And so that kind of building up, like, what is your lexicon of pleasure?
I love that when you said fuchsia, the first thing that comes to mind for me is like leopard. When I wear leopard, which today I'm not wearing leopard. That's actually a lie. My pants are leopard, but I'm always wearing some type of leopard because it helps me just like step into the, I don't, this sounds so corny, but like the confident, bold person that I am I am wearing this leopard design.
Right, like wearing that. I saw on your website that you've got like leopard on. And I think one of the challenges I've seen with people is we do feel like we're being silly or corny or, you know, that's, it's stupid. Like I hear so often that phrase of like, I know this is silly, but I know this is corny, but, and I think I'm on a one person, hopefully you'll join me, kind of mission of we need sincerity. Like we've become this culture of irony, right? And being so self-conscious. And I want us to be sincere. You can't have great ironic sex.
Yes. How does like pleasure tie into sex? I ask people a lot of times, like, what does pleasurable sex look like for you? What does good sex look like? And a lot of people can't answer that question. And I'm curious, like, how do you define, like, pleasurable sex?
I would say not just sex in which both people have an orgasm, although that's a nice when that happens, decent place to start. But when I think of pleasurable sex that I've had or that I want people to have, oh, there's a sense of playfulness. There's a sense of discovery. You start with, oh, I think I like this position. And then suddenly somebody makes, you know, just one little like switch, or they ask you, do you like this? And you start, there's enough time to kind of pause and see, like, do I like that? And it becomes play. Like, that's the most pleasurable sex that I've had, is we're playing, we're exploring, silly things happen, lube bottle goes flying, there's laughter. I think looking at the other person and being looked at is both very intense, sometimes it can be a little scary, and then when there's that kind of deepening and relaxation, then it's watching somebody watch you, watch them enjoying each other, whole nother level.
Mind-blowing.
Yeah. I'd say those are some of the elements.
What I think of when I think of like pleasurable sex, I think of like experimentation and trying different things. What's interesting is that like each of us find pleasure in different things and we're not all of the same. So how do you go about like discovering what pleasure means to you and like owning your own pleasure?
I mean, on one hand, I definitely say like when we're having sex with ourselves, I like to say self-pleasure, having sex with ourselves as opposed to masturbation, which always sounds like a steam engine is supposed to go off or something. I hate it. So when we're having sex with somebody else, though, I think of like food, where how wonderful if people kind of share, oh, I like this or I like that. And we create a shared meal. It's not, you should eat this, or I can't believe you don't want to eat that. That it really becomes this, oh, taste this, tell me what you think. Oh, you don't really like that? Okay, not attached to that outcome, let's try this. And so that's one way of kind of circumventing kind of conflict of what if we're sharing and we're being hospitable? Yeah. So in terms of owning pleasure, I would say like even moving away from the idea of owning something, because it's, you know, you can't own a sneeze or even like own an orgasm. It comes and it goes and then it's gone. But I think we can do practices, right? So I'd say one of the main places to start is in having a different story about pleasure. So often when I'm working with clients or teaching classes, what I see and hear is people who have been taught, and I had to overcome this teaching as well, that pleasure is indulgent, selfish, bad, destructive, evil. I mean, these are some loaded things. And so most people who are generally good people are like, well, if pleasure is bad and I'm not a bad person, then I should put that away. And so I think if we have new stories about what pleasure is, that pleasure is connective, pleasure is exploratory, like you said, pleasure is about curiosity for self and other, then it starts to kind of flow naturally.
I love that. And I think that so many of us have kind of dealt with this shame and stigma that society puts on us when it comes to many areas of our life, but definitely pleasure. And especially as being a woman receiving pleasure. I know for me, that was something that I had to work through, is that I always felt like my body was for somebody else's pleasure. And if my partner was happy, therefore I am happy. But that's not the truth. Like, I had to learn that, hey, take control and responsibility of my own pleasure and discover myself, practice my own pleasure routine, learn what works for me, because then you can vocalize that to somebody else.
Right. And then it becomes that sharing again of, come into my place, let me show you around, and let me like go into your place, let me show you around. And it becomes so much more fun. And there's more, it sounds kind of a maybe a brittle word, but when we have autonomy, meaning like we know that we have choice and we know where we begin and end, then we truly can share, then we can truly understand what feels good to us. A yes is really a yes. A no is really a no. And one, I've seen people start to have better partners, meaning you'll find people who do actually want to know what's true and good and right for you. And then, of course, more great sex is possible. And I would say probable.
Absolutely. And I think that I've definitely noticed on my own journey, the more I self-discover and own my own pleasure practice, I have much better sex.
Yes. Yes. Is it that you're able to kind of articulate the sensations you want to feel or say, does it give you more words? Like what's changed for you?
I would say words, but then also like empowers me to talk about it more. And so I feel confident in what I'm sharing, which I think makes it a lot easier too.
Absolutely. Yeah. We're like, oh, you should know this. Or again, if we go back to the food, why would you like hide? If someone's like, what kind of food do you like? You're like, no, I don't talk about it. I mean, of course you want to talk about what kind of food you like. Let me tell you all the kinds of Italian food I like and the Mediterranean food that I like in each version and why.
Right.
And kind of my dream is a world where we talk as easily and as enthusiastically about sex the way we do about food. And all the strange combinations of food that we eat, you know?
Right. Like, I like my sushi this way, not this way, but I'm open to trying it that way. Like, that's how we should talk about sex and pleasure. I love it. I do a monthly women's circles where we're talking about intimacy, sex, love, pleasure, all of that. And I think that's a really great way to start practicing having conversations about sex, which helps you become more confident in having those communications with your partners as well. I know there's some studies out there that show the more you talk about sex, the more better, more frequent sex you have.
Okay, the better, more frequent. Yeah, that would make sense because it's on your mind more. You have the words for it. Because that's, I would say, the gift that you're giving to people and the people who are in the circle of putting words. So often we have not had words. We didn't know what we could say. We don't know what they taste like in our mouth to say like pussy or penis or like doggy style or whatever, just putting our mouths around certain words. And we do. We then become more fluent and, you know, we'll then put our mouths on other things. So.
Yes. As soon as you said mouths around things, of course, my mind goes right to the gutter. But how is pleasure communal and societal caretaking?
I love that question. I mean, what I'd really say is when there's all kinds of pleasure, right? And the pleasure of when I connect with somebody, when I alleviate somebody else's suffering, when I know what feels good to me, and so I then want other people to also feel good and to not suffer. This is how, personally, I think we build a different ecosystem, a different culture, and a different society. And that piece of, if I know, I don't know about you, but it's a personal question. But when I've had really great sex, I'm a much nicer person. I want other people to be feeling good. I live in Los Angeles. The freeways are like awful all the time. But when I've had great sex, the freeways don't bother me quite as much. And so I think there's, again, this kind of ripple effect. And also when I've given my own journey, as I've learned to have better and better sex, I become more patient, more curious for people, more compassionate about the struggles around sex and pleasure. Like in following my own pleasure path, it has made me a better person. And I think there's information in that for all of us. If you're truly following pleasure, you don't want people to suffer.
Yes. Do you feel like, this is kind of like a rhetorical trick question, but we are innately having good sex, or it's something that is truly like learned?
Something I've learned. Absolutely. Yeah. Like we've got our wonderful nerve endings and we've got our erogenous zones, which can change over time. But great sex, just like learning to make great food, nobody starts out as an amazing chef or even an adequate chef, right? Somebody had to teach you how to cook. somebody, when you're interested, you then become better and better and better at it. Same with sex. And I think that's one of the hurdles that I have with clients and with other people when I'm teaching is having them change that paradigm of, well, it's just sex. You're just supposed to innately know what you're doing. Yeah, we have the wiring. But again, we still need, there's things to know about how vulvas work and how front parts work and back parts work and, you know, what different kinds of lubricant. This is why I've dedicated my life to this, because there's so much to learn. So I'm glad you asked that question. It is not innate. Go take cooking classes, people.
Right? Right. Oh, I'm so glad that you brought that up, because you're so right. Like, we learn how to do everything we do in life. Like, think about school, elementary school, middle school, high school, college, whatever background you have. We don't innately know how to do math. That's something that we're taught. And I think that so many people, and I do think there's like a shift in society happening, and so many of us are owning pleasure, but I think that people expect, like, you put a wedding ring on and all of a sudden your wedding night, you now know how to have sex. Or that, like, we grow up and all of a sudden, like, sex is good. But some partners, I think, do have a little bit better skill set, maybe because they've learned, but also each partner is individual and likes different things. And they all have to be tailored to cultivate that good sex with somebody else.
Good sex is co-created. It is not one person's responsibility. You can't make somebody have good sex or make somebody have an orgasm. It is this co-created, wonderful experience if both people are looking at it like that. And, you know, if we talk about maths, right, that we start at age appropriate, right, of like we're going to have really kind of simple stuff and then we're going to have more complex stuff. And it's, you can go to whatever, I don't want to say level, but whatever kind of complexity that you want. And bring in those elements. And the math can change over time, just like with literature again, right? Start reading like A is for Apple, and then you might end up reading Lacan and Foucault, and it's a whole other thing.
Yes. Yeah. I wish that like we explored sex more in this opportunity to learn earlier on, and that's how it was kind of presented to us. I've actually not had a conversation about sex in this way. And I love it. I love it. You recently co-authored a book with pleasure with August McLaughlin. And yes. I'm curious, in that book, you talk a lot about pleasure, especially pleasure after trauma. What are some common pleasure traps that you see?
So glad you asked that. It was interesting when August and I started writing the book, it was pretty much right when the pandemic happened. And so she was struggling, I was struggling, and we had to actually like come back to center of what is this book about? This book is about pleasure, and that's our anchor point. That's our life preserver. And so even in how we created the book itself, we had to keep practicing pleasure. So I would say some of the pleasure traps that I've seen with people, a sense of rushing, feeling like, you know, there's no time for pleasure. I have to get to the next thing. I have to get to my job, or I've got to go to sleep, or, you know, I've got to make this. And everything is so stripped down to like get through it. And that literally is the death of pleasure. Pleasure happens when we slow down enough to build something, to cultivate something. So I've seen that a lot, a great deal. I've seen the feeling as though we don't deserve pleasure, making it conditional. That's a big one that I've seen of, when I accomplish this, when I finish that, then I will reward myself with X. Instead of when we feel good and when we feel taken care of, that's when we usually try things, take a risk, get creative, meet new people. Like, pleasure is integral into truly moving into life. What else have I seen? Trying to do new stuff all alone. You know, people if they decide to make pleasure kind of a practice, there's this kind of, I need to hide it or not tell anybody about it, because again, it might be silly. Critical to find other people who are also, maybe they're stumbling too, but you're all stumbling together. And then it becomes, again, a shared experience. So those are some of the things that I've seen.
I'm cracking up because yesterday a girlfriend of mine called me and she was like, what are you doing? And I'm like, well, I was just laying down about to self-pleasure. And like super like blunt about this is exactly what I was going to do. And so many people do have a hard time saying that or just being like owning their desires. And again, coming back to like, quote, owning your pleasure, but we have so much, oh, is that dirty to talk about it? What does that mean about me if I enjoy it? And it doesn't mean a damn thing about you. That's the thing.
It means you like your body. It means you pay attention to how you feel and you tend to yourself. I mean, it's the same if I'm hungry and thirsty, is there some sort of pride in not tending to that? Which I have to check with a lot of therapists about, because we'll go 8 hours without. And I'm like, that's not modeling good behavior. You have to go pee, go pee, model that to your clients. But it's so ingrained in so many of us.
Well, I was just going to say, we're all humans. Like, we have human needs, biological needs, including sex, but food, bathroom breaks. I did that too. Last week, I was working full time. I haven't worked full time in over a year and a half. And so I worked a whole 32 hours and I had no idea like how I was going to manage that. But then I wasn't eating because I'm busy working. And I'm like, that's not good. As I talk about food and nutrition with every single one of my patients, like here I am not modeling how to nourish your body.
Right. And that, and so many of us, right, in the caring professions, learn to override our body at the same moment where we're trying to help other people, right, do the right nourishing, healthy thing for them. And so that practice, I think when we slow down enough and also create different systems of what are the different organizations that are truly asking us to do self-care and truly affirming and encouraging us to do self-care? Or are they saying, do self-care, but then not asking about breaks, not asking about how they can support us better? Yeah. And so it's, again, I'm so excited because I'm hearing more people in the caring professions create different structures that encourage and affirm pleasure, health, slowing down.
Yes, I'm definitely seeing it more. Now, you talked about how like with COVID, it was kind of rough and writing the book. How did you bring pleasure into writing your book?
There were so many things that we did. One, kind of similar how you felt comfortable enough just to share with your friend, like, I'm going to go self-pleasure. August and I would really talk about kind of how we were doing in any given week. So we would, you know, have like a quick check-in, like, and truly, like, how are you? Not the like, I'm fine, great, brittle, but truly inquiring with one another. So that helped bring a level of like relaxation, which was a pleasure given all the stress we were experiencing. Sometimes we would remind each other to like wear something that we liked, you know, whether it was a blanket or a particular top that one of us had mentioned we really liked to wear. Like, are you going to wear that top or that color looks so pretty on you? August also has a bird. He has tons of pets, but one of them is Miss Wombly. I call her Miss Wombly. Wombly's her name, but I call her Miss Wombly. So I would love to have Miss Wombly flying around while we were doing our talks. And like just these little things that we could do to remind each other, have tea sometimes while we were, because we had to do this all through Zoom. So it was very, we tried to create as much of a world as we could in this little digital box that we had.
Which is so hard. And I think so many of us adjusted very well to understanding Zoom and transitioning to 99% of our lives being on Zoom. But it's all new, and learning how to incorporate pleasure and your pleasure profile that you mentioned into that, I think is so helpful.
Thanks. Like it was interesting.
Yeah. And it's like, it's changing and you're adapting and bringing the little pieces of things that you know that you enjoy, having, you know, assume that you've done the work at that point and know what you do enjoy. You're able to access that arsenal of things. What is needed in order to truly receive pleasure?
One, I think there has to be that a decision. I think all of the big things in life start with a decision of, I want to at least hold the possibility that this could be so. When it comes to trauma work or to even just typical clinical work, that's kind of the biggest part of, does any part of you believe this can be different? And if you can, then I will walk with you. I will like be in front of you. I will do whatever is needed to support you to move forward. But it starts with that. Can you hold the possibility? And so when people do that, then there seems to, and I can support them week by week of, we're going to practice breathing. We're going to practice body scans. What is it you're reading, listening to, watching? And we start building in those supports, and it seems to catch fire. And what I tell people is healing really is exponential. It's not going to take as long to heal from the thing and to have pleasure as it is all the years of suffering that came before.
Yeah, I've found that once I started my personal healing journey, I mean, I've really been on it for about a year and a half, but more aware of it for probably like 2 years. And if you look back, like I'm almost 32 years old. And so over that time frame, like there are a lot of things have happened in my life, but in 2 years, I have literally made a massive shift in my life after I made that decision. And so I love that you brought up that like that the healing process is going to be faster than what I guess caused the trauma ultimately or the lifetime.
And I just like got like chills just hearing like you, like what's been happening. There was a smile on your face. It is, and hear me, like there's so many things that impede our progress at huge structural levels. And so a lot of my work, that's the other reason why I want people to find other folks so that you're not alone. And when it's feeling really heightened, you know that you've got a place to go to and people to go with. But that piece of even the smallest little thing, you know, like do something creative. And I don't care if it's paint your nail or do a little sketch, but the smallest act of creation, of autonomy, of agency that leads to pleasure, like it does change our mind and our body.
So tell me a little bit more about like relaxing into pleasure.
So I like to, if my clients can, I like to encourage them to go float somewhere, whether it's like a place to do a float or if they have access to a pool or we can help find them access to a pool. But that the first time that we can kind of remember that our bodies can be supported, that it's so important to remember and create that feeling of you actually are, the ground is supporting you. We were, our first sensation was of just being buoyant and supported. So I like people to get that sense so they can call that back up for themselves. So the relaxing into pleasure is trying to capture and hold that feeling, learning how to slow down. Again, I try to make it kind of concrete of what's a set you can pay attention to once a day, once a week. I'll send people to go like, I want you to find a flower that you like or a color. Walk outside and next week, tell me how many shades of green you saw outside. But just these things that help us practice, oh, pleasure is literally right there at the end of my notice, at the end of my, just right there. It's like Alice in the Looking Glass all the time. It's right there.
Yeah, it's right there. And it's right. It's accessible to you when you slow down and also make that decision to notice it.
Right. Right. You don't need to buy anything. You know, it's nice to be able to buy pleasant things, pretty things, places to go, you know, massage, all of these things. And if you have the resources, go for it. But what I want people to know is nobody can sell your pleasure back to you. Nobody can sell your body back to you or your uniqueness back to you. It is yours all the time, at any time.
I love that you brought that up because the other thing that that makes me think of is money and happiness and pleasure. So many people associate money with, oh, well, my life would be X, Y, and Z if I had this amount of money. But the reality is, when you look around, there are so many people who are very wealthy who have no pleasure or happiness in their daily life, and that money does not mean everything.
Right. It definitely buys options and buys time, right? Because it's, there's a lot of pleasure when you can, like, you know, I just moved back to LA recently, and to be able to have the resources to like get movers, oh, amazing. Such a pleasure. So great. But there is, past a certain amount, which is sadly enough, not that much amount of money, but past a certain point, there's diminishing returns on how much happiness and pleasure can actually buy you. So while I want everybody to have healthcare and a safe place to live and good water, as we have been seeing, that's a problem, and the nourishing food, that plus company, like, that's it. That's really what we need and deserve. And I think when we start from that place of, if we had those things, that would be pleasure and that would be enough. And then we don't need to have billionaires. I'm not going to get started on that. So
I know. That's exactly like what comes to mind. Well, it's interesting because our basic needs are truly so simple. We don't need a lot to survive. But we live in a society where there's a lot of focus on more is better, more of this, more, more, more. But what is that actually doing for you? And is that actually causing you more stress and anxiety?
Yes. Mm-hmm. That. Instead of savoring, like the art of savoring, whether it's food, a conversation, you know, when you have those conversations with somebody where you're high afterwards because it was just so delicious, so good, like that costs nothing, right? And it can carry you sometimes for hours or days. And so I want people to rediscover the art of savoring, rediscover the art of seduction, self-seduction. And that's not manipulation. Seduction is not manipulation. Seduction is, hey, do you want to join me in this place? Come into this warm water with me if you want. And again, it's that hospitality of our bodies and of our eroticism. And so if when you realize that you actually have enough and you can fill up your senses, a lot of the other like needs and wanting to run, it falls away. It just falls away. You don't have to fight against it. You're just like, oh, like, I'm not hungry for that bad thing anymore. Capitalism can't get me because I'm right here.
Yeah. You brought up like going through a body scan as kind of a way to slow down, receive pleasure, relaxing into pleasure. What is a body scan? And if you're open to it, I would love you to take us through a body scan.
Okay. So basically a body scan that can be short or long. And when I'm starting to work with people, I tend to like, if you just even do a quick body scan, 30 seconds, 10 seconds, that's great. So a body scan is literally just taking a few deep breaths, slow deep breaths, and just noticing what sensations are happening, what you're aware of, what you're not aware of, and then just starting from the top of your head down to the bottom of your feet. And just, I call it a weather check. Super simple. So if you want to follow along with me, you can keep your eyes open or keep them closed, whatever's comfortable. Take a big breath in. And a big breath out. You can breathe through your nose. You can breathe through your mouth. And just kind of relax and feel the air coming in your nose and then exiting your body. And then just focus on the top of your head and your forehead, just seeing if there's any tension or no tension at all. Noticing your face, your jaws. How do your cheeks feel? And then another gentle breath. And then seeing what your shoulders feel like. Do they feel like they want to lift up? Do they want to drop? Is there any sense of tension or ease? What does your chest, your heart feel like? Does it feel open? Does it feel clenched a little? Is there like a butterfly fluttering around? And then noticing what our stomach is doing. Are we holding it in at all? Are we tightening it? Are we letting it just protrude? Is there an ache there? Is there a sense of good fullness there? Emptiness? And then noticing our hips and thighs and our butt. Does it feel clenched? Does it feel relaxed, like it's taking up the seat? Are we sitting back? Are we noticing even the temperature in the room? Do we feel kind of at one with the environment? Are we feeling cool, too warm, just right? And then again, the thighs, our knees. Is there any ache or it feels nice and pliable? our calves. We keep a lot of tension there. So just taking a check. And then as we move to our toes and the soles of our feet, our ankles, again, do we feel like we can move them? Is there a sense of stiffness, tightness, or we can't really feel them at all? And then wiggling our toes just to see or keeping them still. And this whole time we're just saying, what is my body telling me? What's it sharing? Temperature, sensation, image. What does it have to share? There you go. Body scan.
Ooh, I love that. Thank you. I've never taken the listeners through something like that. And I think that that's a really good skill to have in your back pocket to, you know, turn to something that you can do for free, something you can do at home, something you can do when you're triggered, something you can do while sitting in traffic when you want to yell at all the drivers. I mean, like, you can utilize this in so many different ways.
Right. And as you're saying, like, it's accessible. And then, of course, if we're going to talk about sex, then this is, body scans are great. If somebody, if a partner is doing something to you, you can ask them, can you keep doing that for just a little longer so I can see how I feel? If I like that, do I want it with more pressure, with less pressure, with more lube, with like a different part of your hand or a different toy? Body scans are, they're the Swiss Army knife.
Yeah, I love that. One of my favorite tools for like partners is like the 3-minute massage or like the bossy massage. Oh, I forget who that's from. Have you heard of that before?
I have not, but I'm curious. Talk to me.
Well, so the 3-minute massage is basically where you're telling your partner exactly how you want to be touched for 3 minutes. And then you switch and they tell you how they want to be touched for 3 minutes. And then you can also do like touch them how you want to touch them for 3 minutes and then switch. So there's ways to do it, but it's really practicing like actually feeling and receiving pleasure and communicating what you like too.
I love that. I love that. It's a little like version of sensate focus, but I love the like just taking turns. And I mean, and also that piece of, oh, let me show you what I think I would like for on you, and oh, it feels like this. Can you try to mimic that? Or I want to, you know, I love chest hair. So when somebody has chest hair, I'm like, can I just like play with your chest hair? If that's not a problem, can I just enjoy that? And again, that hospitality piece, right?
Which reminds me, you know, I had a conversation with August actually earlier today, and we talked about consent, but, you know, asking, can I play with your chest hair? Can I play with your hair? I mean, typically we don't just walk up to somebody and play with their chest hair, but I love that you gave us an example of asking for consent.
Yes. I mean, it's when the phrase consent is sexy started to happen in the zeitgeist, I cannot tell you how excited I was. I come from the world of BDSM, and the asking for things is so critical. It's part of the eroticism of it. And to be able to say yes or no, to me, is really hot. If somebody says no, it's like, all right, woo, they've got boundaries. Like, this is somebody who knows that they are of value. And so if they don't want something, they are not going to accept it. Hot. Respect. Love it. Love it. So yeah, but I'm hoping I meet people who want me to play with their chest hair because I love it.
Yes. So this has been an amazing conversation. If the listeners take something away from today's conversation, what would you want it to be?
It's a terrible, terrible thing to tell somebody like me to only pick one thing, because I'm like this and this and this. So it won't be one thing. It'll basically be one, I want people to know how utterly worthy and legitimate they are. Like, fundamentally, you are here on this planet. You are part of life itself. And you deserve pleasure and care. And you deserve to give that to other people. And you deserve to have that offered to you. And I just want people to grasp that with both hands and all their being and just know that and walk from that. Pleasure is absolutely your birthright. So please, like, bring it close to yourself and help other people understand that.
I love that. And I think that's a great way to sum up today's conversation. Where can the listeners find you at?
They can find me on Twitter. I'm there as Jamila_Dawson. Very simple. And then I'm on Instagram as Jamila.thesextherapist. And then see my website, which is Fire and Flow Therapy.
Beautiful. I love it. Well, thank you so much for sitting down with me today.
Thank you so much for just a delicious and pleasurable conversation. Thanks so much, Jordan.
Aw, thank you. This podcast is sponsored by Intimacy Coaching by Jordan Donnell. Have you ever desired more from your sex life or feel like you're having good sex but curious about how to make it even better? Are you desiring a deeper intimate connection with yourself? Or maybe you are dealing with desire and arousal concerns or struggling with communicating your desires with your partner. If you're hearing this and thinking, that might be me, and you're curious to learn a bit more, let's chat. I would love to talk with you more to see if working with me is a good fit for you. To learn more about intimacy coaching with Jordan Donnell, go to coaching.jordandonnell.com. Thank you for listening to this podcast.
Thank you for joining today and continuing to bring awareness to women's health. If you love the show, please subscribe so you never miss another episode and leave a review for others to see. If you want to see me on the daily, you can check out my bio for links to all my pages. Be sure to share this episode with your girlfriends. Thanks again and see you next episode.